This podcast is a Uniting Heart and Soul production. Welcome back to Filthy Hope, a podcast from Uniting Heart and Soul in Wallara, where we dive into the grey spaces where Jesus, life and culture intersect. I'm your host, Jonty Cornford, Creative Director here at Uniting Heart and Soul, and joining me, as always, is the Reverend Vanessa Williams-Henke, Senior Pastor here at Uniting Heart and Soul. This week, we're continuing our look into topics of intimacy and sexuality by hearing a very personal story about marriage and infidelity. We are going to be going there this week and talking about sex, affairs, trauma, and guilt. So as well as the usual swearing warning, I do have to warn you that this episode gets pretty raw, even for us. If you're new here, this podcast is all about stripping the bullshit and hypotheticals out of religion and faith and having real and honest conversations about where faith and religion meet real life and culture. There are plenty of other episodes waiting to be discovered if you want to dive into more and see what we're about. But for now, let's dive into the podcast. Ness, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, look at us go.
How you doing?
I'm okay. I'm good. Yeah. Dealt with the shocking Sydney traffic today, but other than that, doing all right.
Yeah, it was pretty awful. I think there's another train strike today.
Yes.
There's boatloads of people on the road as well.
Absolutely. I think they're all coming back into Sydney, Jonty.
Yeah, it's the Wild West out there at the moment on the roads. I think it took me like an hour and a half to get here this morning.
Yeah, it was epic.
Yeah, but you know, nothing a bit of music or a podcast
correct
can't fix.
That's right.
She'll be right. So today, you're going to be talking about quite a confronting subject matter. We're going to be talking about affairs and infidelity. So I'm really looking forward to that. And I think...
I'm not. Glad you're looking forward to it. Just going to bare my guts on the podcast again.
Well, I think I think it'll be really worthwhile for people to hear.
I hope so. That's why I want to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's a thing, you know.
Looking forward to it maybe isn't the right phrase, but I'm excited for what this is going to do for the podcast. I think it's a really brave thing to open up about this sort of thing. So, but before we do that, we have to do Van Central.
Play the music.
So I'm up for Vent Central this week, and I want to be very careful while I do this one because I don't want to name and shame anyone. But this isn't just a church thing; it's a people thing. In any situation where you are paid or not paid, and you have to mobilize and organize a team of volunteers. By very nature of what that is, there's a certain level of buy-in that you need to get from your volunteers to make sure that they're actually going to show up and do the thing that they're volunteering for, because they're not being paid to do it.
100%.
And I've had plenty of, situations where I'm the volunteer. So I totally get it, right? My frustration, and it's particularly strong for me this week because I'm in a situation where I'm having to organize volunteers, is the lack of communication and the, I guess when you're a volunteer, you're able to just pull out of things because you're not getting paid to do it. Mm. So you're kind of under no obligation. It's sort of like, because you're just offering your time, at any point you're able to kind of go, well, I've given you enough of my time, I'm out.
Hillsong Church wouldn't cope with that.
No, no.
They've run their whole enterprise on volunteers.
Yeah, and, you know, it's this tough thing because I understand. Stuff comes up, right?
Sure.
Family, sickness, you double book yourself, whatever. But it's the less than a week out from some event. Oh, forgot. I've got, it's actually Father's Day this week. I'm like, okay, that's on Sunday. This is a Saturday thing. Sorry, I can't be there. Okay, no worries. But like, you could have looked ahead in your calendar 3 months ago when you agreed to do the thing. So again, and this is a slightly guilty event central because I feel bad, you know.
Oh, I don't think you need to feel bad. But not at all. It's that they've let you down.
Yeah.
It pisses you off.
It does. And I think what it does as well is it just throws more work than the volunteer was doing in the first place back on
other volunteers
and the 100%. Person trying to run the thing. So yeah, that's my Van Central this week. It was a rough earlier part of the week because you suddenly like, shit, I got no people to do this thing now. And
I'm sorry you're having to deal with that. It's very frustrating.
And unfortunately, the reality is that when you work in the church, often that is the case.
100%.
Yeah. But, you know, shit happens and you got to kind of be open to being flexible to that and working with people.
And the other thing we say in the church is God's all over it anyway.
Yeah.
And he has a bigger, better plan for that event. And I can't wait to hear that how that rolls out. Sunday morning when we catch up, you're going to say, I bet you come to me and you say, Ness, oh my gosh, I'm so glad blah and blah didn't turn up because blahette and blah too turned up and it was amazing.
I'm sure that'll be the case. So again, apologies. I'm not trying to slack on anyone in particular because I get it.
No, bullshit free zone. Jondi, that's crap. We absolutely are and you are naming it.
Yeah. It gives me the shits when it does happen.
But play the music. Yeah.
Play the music, Jonty. All right, and we're back. So, Ness, to sort of frame this, we are obviously in our series, Love, Sex and Jesus.
Yep.
All about sexuality and intimacy. Mm-hmm. I envision what we're doing today as being part of an ongoing thing that we might do every once in a while called Scenes from a Marriage, where we're just going to get a little peek into what marriage is like.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the things that the church has historically been pretty bad at in certain Christian circles is preparing young people for what married life is like. So I think this sort of thing could be incredibly valuable to people. So in as much detail as you are obviously comfortable sharing, we're going to dive a little bit into a story from your marriage with Dr. Rob, who we've had on the podcast before. So I'll just throw over to you, and we're going to hear a story from Ness about her marriage, and then we'll unpack it a little bit and have a bit of a discussion. But until we do that, over to you.
Yeah, okay. So I was in my late 30s. I had one child who was about 2.5, and went on a business trip with my husband, thought I'll jump on that, take my daughter down with me. We had this lovely trip and I was really excited to meet Rob's team, and So my daughter and I stayed at the hotel while they did a big conferencey night, and I had dinner with them before they all went out. And then Ginger and I went back to the hotel, and I tucked her in and I watched telly and just went to sleep. And Rob never came home. He never came back to the room until I was so worried about him, and he's not picking up his phone. And sort of 6 a.m. in the morning, Rob comes through and just curls up on the lounge in the room and goes to sleep. And I had the shits. I didn't know where he'd been. I just thought it must have been a big night on the booze and they've had a big conferencey night and he's just hungover and cactus. Anyway, we'd planned to get up and have a bit of a sightseeing day the next day, which was ruined because he was just catatonic. And it's interesting, we were down at the 12 Apostles down on the Great Ocean Road. I hate those fucking apostles. I can't stand them. I don't like seeing pictures of them. I don't want to know anything about them. I hope they crumble and fall into the ocean. That's how I feel about the fucking 12 Apostles. I have very bad trauma in and around this. Anyway, that day we had, later on in the day, we caught up with a couple of friends of Rob's from work, a couple of really nice ladies that were on his sales team, and I had Ginger with me, and everything seemed fine. They all seemed a bit hungover, but it was all, they were really kind and lovely to me, and I felt like a part of the little group. And anyway, Rob and I come home and we get on with life. But Rob and I noticed that there was a real distance happening between us, and he was different. I just describe it as that. And I was busy running my business, and life was odd. I could sense something wasn't right. Anyway, a little while later, Ginger was then about 3.5, so a year later, I come home from teaching a class late at night, and Rob has said he's tucked Ginger in and he says to me, we need to talk. I said, okay, great, you okay? Is everything all right? He was so weird. I said, what's up, babe? And he said, did you have an affair? I said, no, I did not have an affair. What are you talking about? He said, I know you've had an affair. I said, Rob, hon, I have not had an affair. Where on earth do you get this information from? He said, well, your sister and your brother-in-law have come over and told me that you had an affair. In that moment, my life just exploded into a million pieces. Because he said to me, don't worry, hun, I've had one also. And I went from zero to psycho in a nanosecond and said a whole range of expletives that you'd probably, I won't say them because I know you go in with your backstory and press delete and put shit sounds over it. So I'm not going to say that I fucking lost my temper. And he then spilt his guts and told me about this affair with this woman, and young woman, of course, younger than me, no kids, a chick on his team. And I just didn't cope. I just said to him, well, you can just fuck right off. I am packing up the kid and we're going to sell the house. I am done. I'm out of here. I'm not going to live with you anymore. Because I had given my life to Christ years prior, and I was a part of Pentecostal church in the Hills District at the time, and really loving my life with the church and what I was doing and loving God. And in that very moment, I thought to myself, and I remember screaming out to God, why have you forsaken me? Why? I have gone through this child abuse shit. I've I've turned around. My life is completely on track, and now my husband's gone and fucked a chick at work, and my life is going to implode right now. And I just thought, I screamed out to God that night. I'll never forget it. I was in my bed and I just thought, fuck you, Lord. Fuck you. How can this be a thing? Rob slept on the lounge and we did a whole lot of screaming, and miraculously Ginger never even woke up. That's an amazing thing. The next morning, there was a knock at the door early, and I went to the door, and it was my Jehovah's Witness ladies that I'd been evangelizing to. They would come and knock on the door, and Rob didn't like them when they came. Remember, he's not a Christian. He was anti anything Jesus at this stage. And they would knock on the door, and I would sort of usher them away or tell them to come back when he wasn't home. So they knock on the door. Rob was home because he hadn't slept all night, hadn't gone off to work. And I invite the ladies in. And in that moment at the door, he was at the end of the hall sitting down at the table, and I just thought to myself, God has not forsaken me. He has sent his reminder, and like angels in these J-dubs at my door that I'd been trying to tell about Jesus for all these weeks when they'd turn up. And I got this sense that God was really nudging me in the back, like a big shoulder charge. And I thanked them, and I said to them at the door, I overshared. I've just found out my husband's been fucking a chick from work. It's not a good day today, but I just want to thank you for turning up today, because I've got a sense that your visit is going to be a huge part of my story. And they said, oh, darling, we'll pray for you. And I said, thank you. And then they left. Then, next thing, I hear Rob in the shower. I thought, I hope you trip over and break your neck. Hope you're so overtired that you slip on the soap and die and cut your throat on the glass. I can't believe I just said that, but that's what I thought. He got out of the shower and he said to me, do you have Uncle Johnny's phone number? Oh, my Lord. And I said, why? He said, because I just got a vision from God of a place I need to be baptized. And I thought, yeah, of course you do, you fuckhead. Yeah, of course you do, because I've just said that I'm going to leave home, I'm going to take the child, I'm going to screw you for every cent that you've got, and I'm going to take half of the house, and I'm pissing off. And now you want to talk about Jesus? Now, after all these years, now after ridiculing me of being a Christian and giving me a hard time for loving Jesus, now today you've decided today is the day that you think you want to be baptized? Well, fuck you, is what I thought, Jonty. And he said, no, Ness, I really need to ring Johnny. Now, Johnny is a Pentecostal minister who was living in Dorigo at the time. I gave him Johnny's number. He's my uncle. He rang Johnny and he told Johnny what had happened. And Johnny said, you need to get in the car and come up to Dorigo, because I think what you're describing is a place in the Dorigo River Valley called Never Never Creek. So we pack up the car, load Ginger in the car, and we head up to Dorigo. And Johnny says to me that he'll have deep conversations with Rob. And Rob had like an epiphany in that moment that he needed to give his life to Christ. It was really bad, Jonty. We got up to Dorigo. It's a long drive up there. It was stressful. And I think I was probably quite dissociative and not coping, but still planning to live in Neutral Bay in an apartment that I was hatching in my brain, taking the kid. But Rob was quite compelling, and he was saying how sorry he was for what he'd done and how he needed forgiveness, and he was going to seek Jesus for forgiveness. And then I'd been a Christian for quite some years in that time, so I knew the forgiveness piece because I myself had been forgiven. But I was casting such huge judgment on Rob for what he'd done. And I wanted to know all the details. So the 5 hours up to Dorigo, I wanted to know every detail about how many times he'd had sex with this girl and the full thing. And, you know, I'd make him pull over in the car and tell me more while I sobbed. And they'd had this full-blown affair for a period of time. We got to Dorigo and Robert had, you know, big, long, heartfelt chats with Johnny, who ministered to him in the time. And a few days later, Johnny got his Connect group together and we gathered by the river, the Bellingen River in the Never Never Creek, and Rob got baptised. Ginger was there, I was there, and we were there with all their friends from church. And it was a really amazing moment of redemption. And I saw Rob, and he will tell you, we should get him on and ask him his experience. He talked about going down to the abyss, to the darkness, and all his sin being literally drowned in that creek and being fully redeemed and made new as he came out of the water. And as strange as it sounds, he looked really different as he came out of the water. It was bizarre. It was a bizarre thing. And that was the start of Rob's journey to loving Christ and accepting him as his saviour. And that was 22 years ago. And wow. Our marriage endured that. But I think the piece that I need to share is that I was not without sin myself, because Rob, when he turned up I'd come home from teaching the spin class and he said to me, your sister and brother-in-law have been here and told me that you'd had an affair. I had an affair, Jonty, and I lied to Rob at that time. And I'd had an affair very early on in the marriage before I was a Christian. And my sister had told Rob about it. And I think it was designed to destroy the marriage. I think that moment was really designed to unravel us. And, you know, if you could talk about evil forces, I could see it and feel it happening at the time. Because it was actually that affair and unravelling of my child abuse, and it was the child abuse that led me into the affair because I needed somebody who could understand me. And I found that in this other man. I think, and that led me to my salvation story. But I think the two of us coming together and laying our junk independently of one another at the foot of the cross was palpable. But it wasn't a moment that it was all over for us in terms of our recovery as a couple. That took a long time. It took a long time for me to trust. It took a long time for me to emotionally and physically re-engage with Rob. Here's an interesting God moment. The night before my sister and brother-in-law came over and disclosed about my affair, which made Rob feel comfortable to share about his, I'd had sex with Rob. Guess what? I fell pregnant with Aurora. But at the time that this all unravelled, I didn't realise I was pregnant with Aurora. We come back from the Dorigo adventure. I don't get my period and I realise I'm pregnant with Aurora. And I felt trapped in the marriage. I felt, what is God doing right now? I'm already hung up to the max that he's been shagging this hot chick in Melbourne that's younger and beautiful. I'm getting bigger and bigger and bigger by the day in my pregnancy, and less confident in my own self, feeling trapped in the marriage. Couldn't leave if I wanted to at that point, so I thought. And you know what? God did an incredible thing, because Rob's Christian journey in the 40 weeks of my pregnancy, it took me 6 years to get where Rob got to in 40 weeks. I mean, he is Dr. Rob. So he's clearly smart. He got there in such a short period of time, you know, that took, maybe it's because I was and their theology is dodgy and watered down. Who knows? Anyway, I think he got there so fast and learnt so much about Jesus and his saving grace. And I watched his transformation. The bigger I got, the more transformed Rob became. It was quite incredible. And then we had Aurora, and it was just Rob and I in that birthing suite together when we birthed her. And we were going to call her Aurora Bell, because Ginger had said to us, Mum, we will have a girl and we'll be calling, she'll be born in Batemba, and we will call her Aurora, Princess Aurora. I've got a Disney thing. Yeah. Okay, that's another thing.
Yeah.
And we birthed Aurora together, and it was a deeply spiritual and amazing moment. Rob goes home to get Ginge to bring her up and to bring her back in the day. And he rings me and he says, I've been in the shower, the same shower he had the epiphany in. Mm. And he says to me, God said to me, we need to call her Aurora Heavenly Grace, because it's by his heavenly grace that she's conceived and we are family. So we named her Aurora Heavenly Grace. That's the story.
Wow. That's an incredible story.
I don't know how incredible it is. You know, the funny thing is we can laugh about it now.
Mm.
It's been all those years. Aurora's 22. We're nearly in Batemba again. Do you remember? I love that song. We should play that right now. Can you play that right now?
Sure.
Do you remember?
Incredible. It's been a big journey and a learning journey, and I think marriages can survive if you work at it and if you create that beautiful threesome of you, your partner, and God. And when you have that threesome, you can have redemption and healing and the beautifulness that marriage is designed to be. And I only just wish we'd had that from the start, because we were both married. We weren't Christians. I didn't even know about Jesus. I thought Jesus was dumb. So I didn't grow up in Christianity. So I didn't have those foundations for my marriage. We just found it along the way. And I'm so grateful that we found it along the way, even in the way that we found it. Because I've been able to speak into so many people's lives in my ministry as a rev now. Because, you know, surprise, surprise, people fuck people that they shouldn't. And I hear about it all the time in ministry. And I'm able to actually not just talk about it from the perspective, oh, well, Jesus loves you, you'll be forgiven. I can actually go, yeah, man, I so get that shit. Yeah, how did you feel when? I can dive in a very deep and palpable, real way. And I get both sides. I understand what it's like to be the adulterer, and I get to be the person on the other side to receiving that information that my husband's had an affair.
Mm.
So, well, that's, I don't, I almost at a point where I'd say that's a bit of a blessing, that I have had that experience, because it's, I'm just watching being able to turn those stories into God's thread of gold into other people's lives.
I love that phrase.
That's Which awesome. One?
God's thread of gold.
I just made that up, but that's how it feels.
Copyright it now.
Yeah, is it a thing? Have I stolen it?
Well, I know. I've never heard that phrase before, but I love the idea of like shitty stuff happens.
Yeah.
But when you allow God to be present, God transforms those things into life-giving things.
It's a lot of hard freaking work though, brother.
Well, that was... So my question, follow-up question, you already said that it wasn't hunky-dory immediately after all this happened. What can you share, I guess, maybe some insight into what that recovery period looks like?
Oh, yeah. So, find out I'm pregnant, got all those hormones running through my brain, I'm a bit fucked up, I'm distressed. Any time that my brain would go back to imagining Rob having sex with another woman, I'm having to now lay next to him in bed and I'm thinking he's a cheating, effing so-and-so. Meanwhile, I'd had an affair, love my style, do you know what I mean? I'm good at pointing the finger. What a bitch. And I said to him in my pregnant state, I want to ring her, I want to give me her fucking number, I'm going to ring her. So I rang her.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And the dad picked up the phone, the lovely Greek dad picked up the phone. And I had a moment where I told the Greek dad what sort of a slut whore his daughter was for having sex with my husband, and we have a small child. And I said to her on the phone, I nobody come. I said, I had coffee with you down at the bloody apostles, fuck those apostles, and you just looked straight through me. You mole. And I just had this moment of unloading. Oh, my Lord. It was like a scene from a Hollywood movie, Jonty. It was one of my best moments ever. Yeah, then she threatened to take out an AVO. Yeah, so I stopped having to harass her then. Yeah. Mm. I did one other harassing thing in the process because I was really not coping. Even though my husband's found Jesus in the moment, I rang his work. And I said to the secretary, who I knew well, I said, oh, hi, Julie, it's Ness. Oh, hi, Ness, how are you? I said, is Anna there? She said, yeah, just a moment. I'll let her know that you're on the call. I said, oh, thanks. She comes back and she says, oh, Vanessa, actually, Anna's had to duck out. And I said, oh, really, babe? I said, put that bitch on the phone. Or I'm coming down in 10 minutes, I'm going to walk into your office and I'm going to scream at the top of my voice and tell everybody in that office that she's been fucking Rob. Just a moment. Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. I was put straight through. It's amazing. I gave her another mouthful. Maybe that's why she wanted to take out Navio. Maybe. They were big moments though.
Yeah.
Very confronting.
Absolutely. And I guess what were the ongoing conversations with Rob like?
Oh, constant. I said to him, you need to answer my questions until I've got no more questions. Mm-hmm. I know it'll run out. The trauma will run out in time, but I need to ask until I don't need to ask anymore. And him as well. He asked until it ran out for him as well. And so we just granted each other that grace, I suppose, along the way. And it went on for ages until it didn't anymore. But we had to be with each other in those moments. And he was very gracious. He was more gracious than me. He was much nicer than I was. Just would hold me and I would cry. And it just felt like it was going to kill me at the time. I didn't know if I'd ever recover. And yet I'd had an affair. It seems so hypocritical. I can hear myself. I feel like an absolute asshole telling the story. But it was a nasty journey. Mm. One that God threaded his gold through.
Mm. There you go.
Amen.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope that helps someone.
That's the goal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any, while you've got the platform and the opportunity, is there any more that you feel like you need to add to this story?
Yes,
we can revisit it again later.
I think there's no reason not to forgive in a circumstance like that. Sex is a thing, right? And it feels like real betrayal, because it is. And you promise to be with each other and only be with each other in marriage and to share that intimacy with nobody else. And when you go and share that intimacy with somebody else, you've broken that, your wedding vows. But I think God can help heal that. I don't think if you've just had intimacy with somebody else, I think, and you really love each other, I think there's a way back to each other. Most definitely there's a way back. But I don't think you can just do it with therapy. I think you need God at the centre would be my message, because then you get true forgiveness and the redeeming nature of all the things that Christ does, and washed clean and set free from the guilt and the shame of the things that you did and the lies that you told and the betrayal. So I think there is a road back. And I would love that to be the hopeful message here. So if anybody is having an affair or has had an affair and the guilt nearly kills you, the guilt is just like that robs you of all joy in life. Even after I became a Christian, I still felt this immense level of guilt and shame about what I'd done. And I know Rob would say the same. Yeah, and God just meets you in all of that and helps save you from that. I still feel sad because I wish that I hadn't done what I'd done, and I wished he hadn't done what he'd done. But then we wouldn't be where we'd be today, and that's stronger, wiser, and both with these most amazing relationships with our Saviour. So I wouldn't trade that for anything.
I guess the thing that sticks out to me is the huge step that it takes to become truly open and honest.
Yeah.
And especially when there are secrets held.
Yeah.
And lies. The first of all, how terrifying it must be to break that kind of cycle of misinformation, but then also the incredible healing that comes when the truth is
out in the open. Rob always says the truth will set you free, and some really famous dude said that. And it really does. The truth sets you free and cracks open everything, and there's nothing greater than that. Yeah.
Amen. Thanks so much for sharing. I know that was tough.
I still cry about it. I surprise myself. I didn't think I would. Maybe that's why I kept pushing it off week after week. I don't want to do that this week, Jonty.
Yeah, we've been tossing up doing this for a while. And as I think another thing that I've picked up on, this isn't a completed story. Like, this is a story that is just a snapshot of your life story and Rob's life story and your story as a married couple, but it's also just a tiny snapshot of God's story.
Yeah.
So, I mean, with your blessing, I'd love to revisit this story because I think it's a really powerful... It's powerful for me to hear real stories from married couples about the reality of what married life is like and all of the complexity of who we are as individuals, and because two individuals becoming you know, united as in a union, you know, I'm not married, I live with my partner, some would say that we are already married, but the already in my very limited experience living in partnership with another person, it sounds so obvious, but like, you're not the same person. You have different desires, you have different personalities, yeah. you have different dreams, you have different things that piss you off, you have different... So it's a minor miracle that any two people can share a life together.
Yeah.
And I think the story that you begun sharing today is testament to how important communication and openness and forgiveness and grace is. Because if every couple, married or not, threw the towel in every time the other person fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, no one would stay in a relationship because we all fuck up all the time.
All the
constantly.
Time. Constantly. I did say to Rob that, and we've got a bit of a thread of a joke that goes through our marriage. I say, if I ever get wind of you having sex with any other woman, I'm not going to ask too many questions about it. And I pointed to the heavy fry pan in the kitchen. I said, see that big fry pan, the one that we do the four eggs on? I said, that's going to get wrapped around your skull at 2 a.m. one morning. Brother. And he says, oh, you won't have any reason to do that. I said, yeah, good. Because I don't think it'd look good on your face, mate. And then we usually piss ourselves laughing.
Yeah.
But I tell you, there is a residual. Every time Rob goes away, I feel a pang of panic. Mm. You know, does he love me enough? Am I enough for him anymore? I'd be interested to know if he thinks that about me because I'm the one that usually brings it up. I'm usually the one that says, if I can't get him or if he doesn't ring me quickly back after I've called and I can't find him. I tell you something that has helped is we stalk each other on Find My Friends.
Oh, yeah.
We have our whole family on Find My Friends and I love it. It's helped my anxiety off the charts.
I think...
It's the best.
Was it before? I think you told us about stalking your kids on Ginger's hen night.
Oh, it was the best. It's so good. Because I can not worry then. I know that they're not in a river dead.
Yeah.
And I love that. And I can find that Rob's not in a brothel somewhere because he's actually at a restaurant or he's in his hotel. I mean, I suppose she could be up there in the hotel. But anyway, there I go. It's tough.
Yeah. I'm just deciding whether I share. You know, yeah, I will. I related to that kind of feeling of... So, for context, my... I will double-check she's okay with me sharing this. Relatively early on in our relationship, she went overseas by herself on a holiday that she'd had booked and planned for a long time. She's incredibly independent and loves traveling, and that's what she does, which is... fantastic. So she went over to Europe for 7 weeks. I think a little more than a month after we'd started dating. And I knew intellectually that, you know, she wasn't going overseas to go and have a bunch of sex with a whole bunch of people because why would anyone think that? But there's that little voice in the back of your head where you go from seeing someone almost every day to then...
It's a
thing.
They're
on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
And I think it's obviously not at all the same thing as them having had an affair. But even just having grown up a good Christian kid that has gone through a whole process of shedding... I mean, we talked about purity culture before and we're going to talk about it again in a future episode. Shedding this built-up mythology around sexuality as this... thing that is like so tied to your worth and your worth before God. The process of shedding that, which I thought I was complete, it was this whole thing of like, okay, well, I think that I know that I've gotten rid of this toxic theology around what sex is, but all of a sudden I'm having these little thoughts in the back of my head. So it's a thing, and it's, you know, and we talked about it almost not immediately after she got back, but like that's a conversation we've had before, a few times, and I think just being open about it and talking about it and expressing those feelings, in my experience and from what I'm hearing from your experience, is the only way through.
Yeah, you've got to talk. Talk it till you can't talk it anymore.
Yeah, and to be clear, I'm not comparing that.
No.
Something that didn't happen that I thought might have happened maybe in the back of my head to your story at all. It's two completely different things. But it is that irrational fear that comes with ideas of sexuality and vulnerability.
Totally.
And jealousy and things
jealousy
like that.
Jealousy is a bitch of a thing.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It can be overwhelming.
Mm.
Definitely.
Yeah. I think, and especially if in Christian circles, right? If you grew up in more conservative Christian settings where you're taught, you know, save yourself until marriage because you should only ever have sex with the one person when you're married.
Right.
All of a sudden, you're navigating the world of dating in your 20s.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, I can only speak from my experience, but, like, that affects how you interact with potential dating partners hugely because, you know, on the one hand, you can date a Christian and then you can say, I feel this way about sexuality, wherever you draw the line along what you can and can't do before marriage, which I think is a stupid argument anyway. And they suddenly go, oh, well, I'm totally saving myself until marriage, for example. All of a sudden, there's this huge gap that you have to bridge to even begin to approach what intimacy looks like between two people because you have so completely different expectations and vice versa. If you you're dating someone and you're a good Christian boy and I'll save this story until our dating episode. This wasn't a date, but I was being hit on by a girl at a bar. And the, let's not say aggression, but the confrontingly open nature of how she talked about her sexual partners was so confronting to me because
I bet.
Of my background.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't think the way that the church talks about sex helps setting people up to have healthy conversations about it.
She doesn't sound like she was particularly healthy, FYI. Oh,
let me tell you, I'll tell this story in a future episode because it's a doozy.
Yeah.
I think you're going to love it, Ness. Yeah, but we're gonna share some horror stories from dating. You know, we're gonna talk about dating later on, so I'll save it for that one.
Please do.
Yeah, I think that just about does it for today. I don't think we need to pick at that anymore. You're cooked.
I'm cooked, brother.
Well, to wrap this up nicely, do you want to share gratitude with us?
Yeah, I do. My daughter has been married this year and her husband have just left our apartment underneath our house. They've just bought their first place and they moved out on the weekend. And I thought I was coping all right with the fact that they've left home. I mean, I'm telling you, she's 26, mate.
Yeah.
Like, she's not like 19 and going to uni on the other side of the world or anything. Mm-hmm. But I felt this real sadness that they were moving out. And I think it's because I just love them so much. I love them both. I love Joel. He's just the best son-in-law ever. I think if they were assholes, it'd be easier because I could go, oh, thank God, and I could bitch about them.
Gone.
Thank
yeah.
God they're such assholes. They're messy. They take up the space. I can't stand them. They shit me.
Yeah.
But they don't. They're just the loveliest people. And now they've pissed off and gone. They've left us. And Aurora, my other daughter's now in about 25 seconds after Ginger's gone, moved down to Ginger's apartment.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so she's moved downstairs and Rob and I are upstairs in this big home with all these empty rooms now. And it feels really lonely. But a beautiful thing happened. Her and Joel invited us over for dinner on Saturday night, and we went over and she cooked dinner and it was absolutely beautiful. And I'm so grateful that the fact that they have not moved too far away. Mm. It's not, I've got a friend whose daughter's just moved from Washington to Tunisia.
Wow.
To do a couple of years at uni over there. And I'm thinking, oh my Lord, that would just break my heart. And then our US family whose, you know, family kids go off interstate and never end up coming home, only for Christmas and Thanksgiving. And I feel really bad for feeling sad that they've moved out of home because, Jonty, they've moved 1 minute and 26 seconds away. I'm so grateful. There's gratitude and gratefulness all in the thing because I'm sad, but I'm excited for them. And it's like two feelings all at once that are really big feelings.
Yeah.
And they've just moved down the road into a great apartment in Newport and I'm so happy for them. And I've got this thing. This is what I'm super grateful for also, because as I drive to work, I go past her apartment and I go, dun, 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 with my horn. She's, oh, Mum. And she texts me, I heard you drive past. I said, it stands for, I love you, Ginger, so much. And she pissed herself off.
Nice.
So we've got a new little routine. But, yeah, I'm super grateful for them for being who they are and their generosity and their new independence and their new life.
Mm.
But I think we should talk about empty nesting some point.
Yeah.
I think that could be a really good one.
Yeah, my family's going through a similar phase.
Yeah, they are.
I think, yeah. I won't share all of it because...
Let's save it.
We'll save it for another episode, but yeah.
Yeah.
I live with my partner now, so I don't live at home. We're 15, 20 minutes away, so not quite as close as as Ginger and Joel. But yeah, we go for dinner pretty regularly and have people have them over for dinner and lunches
cool.
and stuff like that.
It's really cool. I'll get used to it. It's only been a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just still settling into the routine.
Mm.
Yeah. I miss her.
Yeah, of course. Mm. Yeah. Well, that does it, I think.
Oh,
what
so
a
good,
huge Jonty. Episode.
Yep. I need to fix up my face. I feel like I've been hit by a truck.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But... hopefully, the goal is that this is really helpful for people. I think it's really, like, even just listening, because I know you've told me in brief all of those things before, but hearing it in full and going through, like, the shit and the piss of it and the awfulness and seeing, but hearing those things while also having this idea of who you and Rob are in your marriage, having met you... not even 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And lining those two things up and seeing that, like, all that stuff does happen, but, you know, marriages can survive it and do.
They definitely
it's really
can.
Powerful. Yeah.
Can I finish with this one thing?
Absolutely.
We're driving our car down to the Never Never Creek for Rob's baptism. Ginger is silent in the back of the car and Rob will talk about having this huge... devil moment, he will describe it. I'm full of the spirit and wanting to play Darlene Check and play my Hillsong music. And Rob yells at me and says, I can't listen to that shit. I'm struggling to get here.
Mm.
He was really having a tearing spiritual moment. He can unpack that for us.
Mm.
And Ginger pipes up in the back of the car, Mummy, Daddy, it's a beautiful world.
How old is Ginger at this point?
3.5.
3.5. Wow.
I'm Ness.
And I'm Jonty. And this was Filthy Hope. We will see you next week. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed that episode, feel free to leave us a 5-star review, leave a like or a comment, or even just share it with a friend. You can find us on socials, or you can email us at filthyhopepod@gmail.com. We only have 2 weeks left in our series on intimacy and sexuality. And if you have any feedback or stories that you'd like to share with us, please don't hesitate to either hit us up on socials or send us an email. We also have an episode on The Exorcist coming up, where we're going to unpack everything to do with evil, the demonic, horror cinema,
and also some pretty surprising and confronting real-life parallels between that film and some of the ministry happening right now here at Uniting Heart and Soul. So, if you haven't seen the film and you don't want it spoiled by us on the podcast, that's your homework over the next couple of weeks. Until then, take Jesus seriously and don't be a dick.